Accession number 10423, rule 4.
We stopped the last tape when you were in Gondokore, Mr. Harland.
Yes.
What else were you doing in
this place? Well, like I said before, we were digging anti-tank traps, and also we carried on debussing and bussing because we were supposed to make a mobile unit. We also trained at first aid, which was very important for us, and also we did small manoeuvres. That was to say we went out into the countryside and did, like, section attacks, platoon attacks. But about the 11th of May, we knew the four-year war was coming to an end. This was because there was a lot of activity. On one day in particular, I was on fatigues in the cook. I was peeling spuds. When the cookhouse was shattered by bullets, and I jumped under the rack where they kept the Dixies. Well, this was all right, like, but the sergeant came around and told us to get a rifle and come with him. But I couldn't get out. He fastened. I got fastened underneath. So the lads pulled us from underneath. I dashed up with the rifle loaded, and it was there that I realized the French didn't care about dead. They were on busy kicking pieces of Germans. It was a German bomber that had crashed, and he was getting rid of his load when he was coming down. We came back home, and things were going just normal. We were still sending our boxing team to the brigade, and also our leave lads were going away as usual. But on the 16th, I think it was, we moved into Belgium.
Before you move, can I ask you, what you say you're digging anti-tank defences. Now, what did that entail? What kind of defences were
these anti-tank traps was about 8 foot deep. They were in two partitions. That's to say they were like on two levels. Never used them. But with us all being miners, you know, working with our arms, they were quite easy work to us. Like, we did that, and there was competitions later on for the ones who did the most digging each day. And they were quite formidable against tanks, as we thought so.
And were you yourself digging as well?
Yes,
as
I dug as well, yes. I went out digging. We had our Wellingtons and we had denims then. We got our denims issued then. We had Wellingtons and denims and gum shoes, Wellingtons. And I did plenty of digging, you know, yes, I dug. But also, I carried a first aid bag. That was one of the differences.
So you were still training in first aid?
Oh, yes.
And so
if anyone was hurt, I was still, it would come to me, yes. That was quite right, yes. I was the first aid man. There was two or three with stretcher bearers there.
And the whole of the battalion was digging these defences?
Everybody in the battalion was digging somewhere. The whole of the battalion, what, around the outskirts of Gondokore at that time. But they were digging at the same place. So in actual fact, this was meant to hold the Germans back, so as you'll see, it didn't.
Were there any other types of defences being constructed?
No, there was no other types. They weren't required because they didn't know which way it was coming, you see. We did spend two or three days at Lille, which was about 5 miles away, and also we were taken to see the Vimy Ridge Memorial from the Great War. It's very interesting.
But sorry, go on.
Gondokore to me was one of the best stations in France, because up to then I was beginning to think the French was against us, but the French people there were good. They were very good. I must say that. Excellent.
And you mixed well with them.
Oh yes. At this restaurant, which was just opposite our billets, there was two young daughters there. They were about 12 or 13. And they would come and they really took care of us. They really were good. Yes.
Can you recall when information came through that the Germans had started their attack through Lowlands?
It was only rumours at first. Like, we heard rumours that the Germans had invaded the Lowlands. That was Belgium, Norway and them places. But as things was just going on normal, we didn't worry about it too much until the time we were told to prepare to move.
With air activity, did that increase?
It increased. It didn't increase as far as the village was concerned. There was no bombs dropped in the village. Only one bomber crashed. That was a German bomber. There was no bombs fell on the village. Not while I was there.
So no one got the opportunity of shooting at them?
No. No.
Can I ask you how you moved into Belgium?
We moved into Belgium with Royal Army Service Corps trucks. We went into Belgium and looked like a mobile unit. When we got to Belgium, Clermont, that was the place we went to, the trucks just disappeared. We don't know where they went to. That's another story.
The journey through, I think you said it was the 16th of May when you set off.
It would be about the 18th of May, yes, 18th.
Can you recall anything of the journey through?
Yes, I can recall about 5 miles into Belgium. I was watched these chaps chasing some of the chaps across the fields, and we asked what it was all about, and, you know, pidgin English, and they said, fifth columnist. That's all I can remember. And also another thing, our ACAC lads, who are the buglers, shot a Stuka down. And that was one of the things I remember very well.
What weapon were they using?
They were using Bren guns, fixed for ACAC. You see, in the infantry regiments, the ACAC are manned by the buglers, and the stretcher bearers are the bandsmen.
Can you recall how the population were greeting you as you went through?
The population was delighted to see us. They admired the new trucks, which were new. And they were really glad to see us come to their help, come to the aid. Yeah, they were.
So you arrived at Grammont.
We arrived at Grammont.
What position did you take up there?
Grammont is on one side of the valley. There's a river. I don't know what river that would be. There's one river, and there's one side of Grammont on the one side. It's split in two. And we were in a big house in Grammont. That's as far as we went. But we could hear the shell fire in the distance.
So when you say we were in one house, that's the stretcher bearers?
Oh, no. The stretcher bearers was in a big house on the Rhone. Yes.
And the battalion, do you have any idea of the battalion positions?
I have no
positions?
Idea where the infantry men were. They were stretched all around Grammont, dug in. And we were just prepared to move to anywhere we were told to go to.
How long were you there?
I was there one night. And on that night, I was on duty all the time.
Do you recall any activity that was going on?
Well, I don't recall any activity. I remember I was on night duty, and I was walking down towards the 1500 weights when I heard a scuffle, and I stuck my binet through, but it was the signal. They were just having a bit sleep in the back of the truck. Well, activity, yes. There was a dispatch rider come flying through to go towards the bridge, and I asked him whose winning the war, and he said, who the hell do you think? But he wasn't a dispatch rider. From what I can gather, he was one of the fifth column, trying to spread despondency amongst the troops. We knew that we were getting a bit of. We knew that the French had collapsed.
Had you been warned about fifth column at this time?
Oh yes, we heard a lot about fifth columnists had been mentioned before we left England. And when we were at St. Remy, it was mentioned there. It was mentioned all the way. There was always a fifth column. I don't know what a fifth column is. A fifth column to me gives me the idea of being another army of some sort, a civilian army. But
Was there any civilian activity when you were in moving back away from the Germans?
Yes, well, that's coming. The next morning, we were told to go back to France. Not by truck. We were no longer mobilized. We had a march. 27 miles, we went back into France. And on the way back, the roads were complete. You couldn't get moved for refugees. Pulling trucks or cars getting pulled by horses. Petrol gone by, you see. I've seen a lot of hardship, yes.
What were your feelings?
They were terrible. I mean, we had the job of burying some small kiddies, you know, that had been hit. But the parents had just moved away. I don't know why.
How had they been hit?
They'd been hit by machine guns, I think. They looked as if they'd just bundled up.
Air attack?
Yeah. There was no ground activity there.
Did you experience any air attacks whilst you were on this march?
On the march, there was air activity nearly all the time, and we always were always fired at them. But the Stuka, after a while, just becomes a plane. It's just the noise. The noise is nothing. It's put there to frighten people. I mean, it's bomb load. It isn't very much, really.
What were the surfaces of the roads made of? Were they tarmac, similar to...
No. The surface of the road, I would say, from Grammont to the French border was just simply gravel. Wasn't real road.
And they were crowded?
They were crowded, yes. Oh, yes. And on the way back, we passed this brewery that had been burst into, you know. So I said, well, I'll have a drink. I don't know what I'll have a drink of something. So I think I got a couple too many. But we got back anyway.
Have you any other memories of the march back?
Eh?
Have you any other memories of your march back?
Well, that's just that we helped them as much as we could. The ones that were being stuck, we used to give them a push, you know, but we had to keep in formation. We were like on each side of the road. I mean, we were marching as in fighting order.
Was this single file?
In single file, yes. It was file on either side of the road. That's who we were fighting.
And did you get through okay, in spite of the crowded roads?
They let us through all right, yes. We got through all right. And we came to a school building in France where we stayed overnight.
You can't recall where?
It was Helchen, and we were stationed in a school. It was rather difficult to sleep because of desks, etc. But we did lie down. On the morning, we awoke and were told that the attack that was going to be held was off on account of very heavy air activity. Nevertheless, we moved down. I can't remember the names of these places. We moved up this road afterwards in single file on either side of the road. The tanks went past us and we came to the Lens Arras Road. Would that be the road? But as we went past, we could see where German troops had been because there was German motorcycle troops lying on the sides.
Can I just ask one or two more questions about the march itself? What do you recall of the march discipline?
Well, I recall of the march, we all were singing, Onward Christian Soldiers. And I remember when we were past the road, we were going through this village when it must have been a zero and shot. Hit the roof of the houses, and one of our lads at behind was wounded and had to be taken out. He called him Tommy Poulter. I've never seen him since. He was taken away. But we were all singing at the time. And then...
Was morale high?
Morale was very high.
What were the feelings of the troops marching
well,
away
I don't
from
know.
The Germans?
They seemed to be... To me, I thought they were... As if they were going down to the Rangers. Because they didn't seem to worry. I remember when the tanks went past. I said, the hellish big tanks. But I noticed one of the crew had a dump to stuck in his mouth. I said, what the hell has he got that in his mouth for? And one of the blokes said that would get you bite his lip.
Can I ask again about the march? What kind of stops did you have for food and rest?
Oh, we didn't stop. We were marching. We were going to be an attack. We wanted to get there as quick as we can. We crossed the road. That was the main. We crossed the road. Then we would. I think some of the lads went to B Company, Stretcher Bearers, because they were going to attack. They were on the left flank. I could see them attacking from where I was lying. I could see how the bayonets fixed. Yeah. Because that's where two of the first lads were killed, Norman Ashcroft and a lad called Burnside. Yeah.
Again, to refer to the march, the long march from Belgium, which would be quite a number of miles. Have you any idea how long it was?
27 miles.
Were there any dropouts? Or?
No dropouts. We're all keen to get where we're going to.
Right, so you're going into the attack. This would be the attack at Arras.
This was going to be the attack up near Vimy Ridge, up Arras. That's all in Arras. Yes.
Do you recall being at the ridge before you started on the attack?
Oh, yes. I remember the ridge. We didn't fight. I went to the ridge before the fun started, you know, and there's one dugout there's got a shell protruding right through. It'd been there since the Great War, you know, and all the sandbags have been cemented. It was worth seeing. And you could see by looking at the ridge, and you could imagine them coming forward up the ridge, you know, bit by bit. And the names on the memorial was terrific.
You can't recall when you started the final march to attack at Arras.
Oh, yes.
Can you recall
that? The final march was started the march forward just after the road. We stopped. No, that's where my words were wrong. B Company went in to attack, then I was with C Company now, and we moved up on the right flank. We moved in, and we got as far as the woods and the graveyard. There's a graveyard here. This has been, it's a terrible sight there, because the graveyard had been bombed, and there's pieces of coffins and all sorts about the bloody place. But even so, that was as far as we got. And I remember, I'm not sure whether it was a German anti-tank, but there was a French tank there, and the German anti-tank was just lying his gun onto ours. When we had a PSM, a platoon sergeant major, there's no platoon sergeant majors now, shook the French tank lads, and they grabbed the tank and fired two shots, and they went away. No bother.
Can you recall any other personal accounts of this action?
Oh, well, that's. Was all action from there. It was continuous after that. From then on, we had to withdraw, by the way. I remember we withdrew and took positions up inside the wood. And I remember all the haystacks on fire. I remember that our colonel was taken out wounded at that time.
Where did they call him?
Colonel Beat. Beat. But Colonel Ross McLaren took over after that line. But Colonel Beat was taken out. He was walking wounded.
And were you close to this?
I was very close. Yeah. But I was in the wood. But you see, the ground was that soft that the bombs, the Stukas was dropping, simply just covered you with mud. I mean, it's got to hit cement to do any real damage, you know. So anyway, I pulled out of there, like, and we were all pulled out and walked down to what you call Petit Vimy. That's below Vimy Ridge.
By then you'd have had some losses, of course.
Well, I've got no idea. I can't tell you about all this. That was the time. Petit Vimy. We all went into a house because we knew we were going to be attacked. And every French house has got a cellar. So we got a cellar, and the bombers came over, and the bloody roof came in. And one of the lads that was down beside me was shouting, "Gas." I said, "That's not gas, it's cordite, that man. That's bloody cordite." Anyway, I got out there, and there was quite a few of the artillery lads wounded. Had to get them off the guns, like, and take them to the the nearest point to the RAP. I thought they'd be safe to go home, but they didn't get home at all. They were all captured.
Those would be the first wounded you picked up,
were they?
They were
the first wounded. It was terrible. This one I had was on the 25-pounder, and there was two of us. There was Sammy Todd. Sammy's been killed. Sammy was killed. And we had no stretchers. So I went across to the old farmhouse and pulled a door off one of his outhouses and tried to get this young kid onto the stretcher, onto the door. We put him on top of the PU, but as we're putting him on, there's a piece of his, some flesh or something coming on me, down me tunic, you know. But we've got a few, quite a few lads have been killed, you know, had to bury them and all. We buried them. But from then on, it was all hit and run.
Well, coming out, what was morale like coming out?
Well, I'm sorry to say, there's one, when we were in position with C Company, there was one chap came dashing out of the lane, screaming. I don't know who he was. It was only a young kid.
And for the rest of them, by and large?
Well, you know, it's the same with army lads. That you try to keep your head. You're scared to death, but you're trying to keep yourself from letting the lads see you be scared.
What did you? How did you cope with the heavy bombing and artillery that fire?
Well, the bombing was the worst. I mean, I've been bombed before in Sibby Street and all, of course. But it was, got you down, stupid. In that time, I think it was 14, nearly three weeks, we used to pray that the daylight would go and that one. The dark would give us a bit of comfort, you see.
What was particularly difficult about Stuka attacks?
What
was particularly difficult for you about Stuka attacks? Was it noise?
Well, there was no noise all the time. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things I can't remember.
It's all right. It's all right, Norman. I can't remember.
On one position, this young officer came around and said, fire 10 rounds and pull out. I said, fire 10 rounds and pull out? I was going to withdraw. And I could see the Germans this time, so we fired out 10 rounds, but there was a young Lance Corporal was screaming his head off. I said, for his mother. I said, why the hell don't he get away, man? You've got these blokes. So we fired out 10 rounds and went, got out, and just as we got to out, the truck was pulling away. They were going to leave us. But behind them was the QSBs, the Cosbys was lined up. People think that the withdrawal of Dunkirk was just done like a mad rush. It wasn't. There wasn't. Nobody left his position until there was somebody behind them. But mind, I'll tell you this. There was quite a few of the heroes of our battalion. Sergeants and sergeant majors was on Durham Station saying we were being wiped out in May, and I didn't get back home till June.
These were men that had come out with
the battalion. Men that had left the men behind, yes. Quite a lot of them.
How did you feel about your officer's conduct whilst
the officers was excellent. Excellent to I didn't have much to do with officers coming back, but I only saw Major McLaren when I was right back to Lipan, and he was a great man, great bloke. I'll tell you about that. At Lipan, the rumour was spreading round we were making back for Dunkirk, you know, and then the rumours was coming round we were going to be evacuated. But when we got back to Lipan, I noticed McLaren was changing his underwear, but I don't know if you know this. When there's an attack on, people change underwear to stop in case they get wounded, like you see. But there was supposed to be 100 Grenadier Guards come and with us try and force our way through. It was impossible. Anyway, it was cancelled.
Have you any other recollections of the retreat to Dunkirk?
Well, Lipan, we thought we were left behind. We went through the Lipan, through the beaches, you know, and dug in on the beaches. We dug in on the beach. And there was Stukas coming along there all the time. But we always fired at them.
And what weapons were you using?
Just old 303s.
And had you been able to keep your unit intact?
Our unit was there was about only 140 left. There was 500 men killed altogether in the Durham, but that was during the war. That was all the war. We marched along that beach intact, but had a hand of weapons in.
And where did you get off? Where were you taken off?
Dover.
Yes, but on the French side, where did you go
off from? I see. Well, I'll tell you what happened. I moved along, you see. There was quite... Well, we'd, as a matter of fact, McClellan had to go along and find out if we were going to get evacuated. And we marched along the beach, and at that time, they were beginning to mortar the beach. They were getting that near. They used the mortars then, you see. And when we got to the pier, it was like a turnstile, you know, and there was a French red cap and a British red cap. And they were letting two English and two French through at a time. That's where it worked. And as we walked along the pier, I took the gun a bit now, didn't I?
No, you're right.
Walked along the pier, there was a big hole where a shell had hitting it. We got over all right, like. But the boat that came to pick us up was called the Sabre. It was an old destroyer. And as we were about to jump aboard, a French officer shouted, "This is for French soldiers only." But I don't know who it was, somebody on the bridge of the destroyer shouted, "Never mind that bastard, get aboard, lads." But mind, saying that, when I got down below, I couldn't stop on the deck because the French wouldn't go below. When I got below, I got between two old French officers. They were fantastic. They were marvellous. They give us everything. Really first class.
Can you recall the scene at Dunkirk?
Well, you know, the scene at Dunkirk, people, I've seen pictures of it. It wasn't that way for the last ones. It was worse for the first ones off. You mean the little boats, don't you?
Well, the overall scene, as you saw it.
Well, I saw the beach was completely filled with men. But there was nobody wading out to sea, and there was no little boats. I knew that the mortars was landing on the beach when I was there, but the photographs I've seen is of men wading out to sea, but I never saw that. And I was one of the last ones off. And I'll go back a bit there now. When we go back from Lipan, about 3 miles from Lipan, there's a canal, and we dug in alongside, near that canal, and there's a small bridge there. And I could see German MT in front there, maybe about 3 miles away, but it was there. But I was standing there, and the bloody officer blew the little bridge up when I was standing. He blew the bridge up, man.
So what date was this that you've taken off?
We came off on the 1st of June, and we got in England on the 2nd.